to Psy.
Spend the day with Psy.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, in our musing series, we now bring you a talk by Professor G. Venkatraman addressing the delegates of the Sri Satya Sai International Orthopedic Conference held on July 22nd to 24th, 2011 at the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences, Prashanti Gram, Puttaparthi.
It's my pleasure now to introduce Professor G. Venkatraman, and some of you might have known him already through many of the books that he has written, and he has published several books. He has been author of several books, both in science, spirituality, Gita, Ramayana, whatnot. Anything you name it, he has written on that. And he has also published several scientific papers and text and publications also in physics. He is a scientist. He has worked in the Bhabha Atomic Research Center and also at Indira Gandhi Atomic Research Center, Kalpakkam, DRDO, and many other places. He has been honored with so many awards. He has been honored with Padma Shri by the Government of India. And also he has been given the Academy, or National Science of Academy has conferred on him the Indira Gandhi Award in 1994 for his contribution. And he has written monographs on dynamics of perfect crystals and beyond the crystalline stage. And Dr. Venkatraman has served as the Vice Chancellor in Satya Sai University. He is the fifth Vice Chancellor of the university, and he is now directing the Radio Sai program and all the other publications. Professor Venkatraman.
At the outset, I would like to offer my humble salutations to Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, who in his own inscrutable way has brought us all together this evening. Thank you, Dr. Vardachari, for your generous introduction. Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I welcome you all to this place which is called Prashanti Nilayam, and in translation it means the abode of peace. So if you have got any worries, leave them behind. You can go to sleep now because I am going to start my talk. And when it is over, I'll wake you up. The title of my talk, in case you have not heard it about it, is The Miracle of Pure Love. What I shall be doing essentially is to offer you a brief glimpse of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba's early life, and from there I will switch to the story of the hospital where you are now meeting and holding an important conference, and wrap it up with a brief discussion of the message that Baba has left for all of us, for humanity. Let me start with a brief glimpse of his early life. This would cover the period 1926 when he was born to the period 1950 when this place was founded. Baba was born in the year 1926, as I just said, on 23rd November. This place where he was born was a very tiny hamlet. It has the name Puttaparthi, that name still exists. And that hamlet was not here, it was about 1.5 kilometers from this place. And it consisted of one road, about 200 meters long, in the form of an L. And at the corner was Baba's hut, or the hut of his parents. There were about 50 houses, mostly mud huts, and there were 200 people back then. It was not even a village, it was what was called a hamlet. There was no direct road to this place, and if you wanted to come, you had to come first to a village across the river. There is a river nearby, in case you do not know. And there is a village on the other side. It still exists, and it has not changed much. You won't believe it unless you go there. This place, according to the British Gazette, going back 150 years, used to be on an elephant walk from a place called Bellary to another place called Kuppam. Presumably the elephants came this way because there was water here. So it was on the elephant track. That was way back. But even in the 40s, the hills around were covered by brush forests. They were there even a few years ago, but now I suppose they are cutting it all down. And there used to be wildlife, foxes, wolves, boars, and even cheetahs. As late as the 40s, people have seen cheetahs come to the river to drink water, once in a while, not very often. And there was even a tiger here that was shot way back in the 40s. Now let me come to Baba and his family. He was born in a family which carried the name Raju. His father's name was Pedda Venkamma Raju and his mother's name was Ishwarama. And Baba was named Satyanarayana Raju. That was his given name. He used to be called at home Satya and his friends would call him Raju. This place was literally godforsaken back then. In fact, even in 1968, an American visitor described this place as about 100 miles from Bangalore and 10 minutes past the Stone Age. That is in 1968, Arthur Schulman from Hollywood. That's how he described it. So you can imagine what it was in the 1927, 28, 29 or whatever. When it came for Baba to go to school or Satya to go to school, he went to a village called Bukkapatnam, which is somewhere there. And he used to walk along with his friends. And by walk it was about 6 kilometers one way. After a few years of studying there, he went with his elder brother to a place called Kamalapuram. It is on the railway between Bombay and Madras, Mumbai and Chennai now. It's about 150 kilometers or to the northeast of this place. And why did he go there? He went there because his brother was getting trained as a teacher in a school there, and the school was supposed to be a good school. His brother was already married and he was staying with his in-laws. They had a reasonably big house, I believe. And so he took his younger brother so that he could receive schooling in a good school. After a few years, his elder brother finished his training and got a job as a teacher in another small town called Uravakonda, which is to the northeast, northwest of this place. The other place was not northeast, I should say. And it's about 80 kilometers. And so Satya went with his brother, stayed in his house and went to school. He was a very brilliant student. Wherever he studied, all his teachers loved him, because he was an outstanding student. And his elder brother was also very hopeful that Satya would come out of school with flying colors, go to college, get higher degrees. And back then the dream was you end up as a government officer, because A, it was a permanent job, B, your salary was guaranteed, C, you could get promotion, D, there were perks. If Baba had followed that path, he would have ended up as an officer of the Indian civil servant. Maybe after retirement he would have become a governor or an ambassador or all such things. The family saw their hope in his future. To put it very bluntly, they looked upon him as their meal ticket, shall I say. That's a very crude way of putting it. But that was the hope they placed, because that was how brilliant he was. However, in the year 1940, suddenly young Satya became somewhat of a recluse. He was very indrawn and he did not communicate much. Something was happening inside him. And what really happened was that on 20th October 1940, he went to school. On the way back, he didn't go to school. He just left for school. He turned and came back. and dropped his school bag and told his brother and sister-in-law, "I am no longer your Satya. I have no family. The whole world is my family. I am going out to the world to serve." Now imagine a 14-year-old kid seeing that in 1940. The brother felt as if he was hit by a ton of bricks, because all his dreams were shattered in 1 second, just like that. Now what did Satya do? He just walked away. He went to a garden, sat there, and a small crowd gathered, and he sang a bhajan like what you heard a short while ago, and that was end of that day. The garden was part of a house of one Mr. Anjaneyalu, who was an excise inspector, and he took a liking to this little boy because he saw a very strong spiritual streak in him. So he kept him in his house for a few days. Meanwhile, word reached his parents. They rushed, and they were not so much worried that he had left school, but his mother was worried that he was going to turn a monk, wear sackcloth and ashes and disappear. So she made him promise, "You do what you want, but you must stay next to me in my village, and you are going to come back with me." He gave that promise. He came back and he stayed here till the very end. That is an important point. Now, let me quickly go through the period 1940 to 1950. When he came back, he said he was leaving home, but he had to come back and stay with his parents in their little hut, which he did not like. Meanwhile, people began to hear about him, and they began to come here and gather and see him, have his darshan, so to say. There was no place in his hut. His neighbors were very accommodative. They were the richest people in town. They had a big house. So they said, "You come and spend the whole day here, go back home to sleep." And the lady of the house was one Subbamma, to whom Baba made reference all his life because he felt so much grateful to her and indebted to her. She received all people as her own guests and cooked for them late into the night. Baba was feeling very embarrassed, but he didn't know what to do. Meanwhile, he began to get invitations, so he used to take trips to other places, Bangalore, Mysore, Madras, Machilipatam, Karur, all sorts of places. This was his way of, you know, lessening the burden on the lady Subbamma. But she had to still come back. At one point he got very frustrated and he just left, crossed the river and began to live in a cave some distance away. He stayed there for quite a long time, several months, almost a year. And this Subbamma was so unhappy, she would cook food for him and take it to him every day and say, "Why are you living in the cave?" He said, "I don't want to trouble people, so many people come to see me, and here, you know, I am left alone, I am all to myself, I can meditate and all." She said, "All right, we have a plot of land that belongs to the family. There is a hut there, you go and live there by yourself. How about that?" He agreed to that, and he came and lived in the hut. And soon, people said, "Hut is not good for you, we'll build a tin shed," and there he stayed. That tin shed was built in 1945. Meanwhile, a lady from Bangalore, who was a very wealthy lady, she was an elderly lady, she owned coffee estates and all that, her name was Doddamanaya Sakamma. She took a fancy for young Satya because she was very spiritually inclined, and she treated him like her own son, though she was very rich and Satya was very poor. And she said, "This tin shed is not good enough for you. Many more thousands are going to come, and how can they all be accommodated in tin shed? Let's get out of this village and create a special ashram for you." So she bought 3.86 acres for the fabulous price of 5,000 rupees. And everybody said she was being cheated, but she paid the price, and that's how the hall where you were, there is a core building there, that came into existence, and it was inaugurated on 23rd November 1950, his 21st birthday. And that became his headquarters, where he stayed and did everything for the rest of his life. Now, the question might be asked, what about his promise made in 1940? just to set the stay as sort of, you know, ambience, I should say background, remember 1940. World War II had started and Hitler had literally swept across Western Europe and he was bombing London every day. There was an air attack on London. And here was this schoolboy saying, I am going to serve the world. Nobody believed it, nobody even paid attention to it. Nobody thought about it. Does that mean that he forgot his promise? Not at all. How can I say that? Well, there is a little story, let me share that with you. In 1947, his elder brother, who always felt that a very wrong decision had been taken by his younger brother, wrote a long letter to him. He said, look, you are ruining your career, you are brilliant, even now you can get back and make something of your life. Do it for heaven's sake. You are moving about with rich people, famous people. You know, he used to be invited by the Maharajas and so on in those days. Maharani of Mysore used to invite him. The Raja of Sandur used to invite him and so on. You go with all these people, they will drop you like a hot potato. Where will you be? People are saying all sorts of things about you. I can't bear to hear it. Get back to your studies. On 25th May 1947, Satya Sai Baba wrote a 5-page letter to his brother. It was almost his testament. And in the course of that, he makes 3 statements, which may be called his mission objectives. I will read them out to you. He says, I have a task to foster all mankind and ensure for all people life full of ananda or bliss. So that is his task. He says, I have a vow to lead all who stray away from the straight path back again into goodness and to save them. That is his vow. And then he says, I am attached to a work that I love. What is that work? He gives the answer. To remove the suffering of the poor and grant them what they lack. So he says, I am not forgotten. And he also says, I will never give up those who attach themselves to me. And very prophetically, he makes the following remark to his brother. You will yourself see the full glory unfolding in the coming years. People must have patience and forbearance. I don't think anybody would have dreamt what was going to happen because something wonderful happened. And how did that happen? It happened because of Baba's love. And that is why I have entitled my talk, The Miracle of Love. Let's now move into a faster gear. He has come here. It is literally the middle of nowhere because there was nothing here. The village of Puttaparthi, hamlet, was still about a kilometer or so away, and he was all alone in the wilderness. In 1954, he laid the foundation stone for a small general hospital. It was a small step, but also a great leap, as Neil Armstrong said. Why? Because before that, if anybody fell sick in Puttaparthi, they had to go 6 kilometers to the village of Bukapatnam. And what was there? There was a dispensary built by the British in 1914. A dispensary means there is a doctor and he may at best give you a bottle of something called medicine. My boss used to talk of the public medicine. He said the doctor had 4 bottles and all he would do is mix the 4 bottles in different way, put it in a bottle and give you. That was medicine. You have to trust in God and survive. So, having a hospital where a patient could be admitted was a great step forward. There were 10 beds, 4 for men, 6 for women. Obviously, women needed more because they had to deliver babies. And for the first time, a woman could go to a hospital and deliver babies. That happened in 1957. I talked to one of the early doctors who served there as a superintendent. He's still here. He is 95 or so. His name is Dr. Alreja. And used to say back then, every day Baba would come to the hospital. He would spend 2 hours there. While Alreja was examining the patients, he would often talk to the patients in Telugu and tell that man didn't know Telugu. He's a Sindhi who came from Karachi. So he would translate and tell him, what is the problem? Doctor will ask a question. He will act as a translator. So he knew everything about every patient. And then he would go around, talk to them and so on. Every day he would spend 2 hours. So, this way, he connected to all the people who are working in the hospital. And he was literally showering love. And that produced a lot of beneficial, what you call, returns also. Let me give you a simple example. I have with me personally in our archives, a letter written by Baba in those days to a gentleman called Vittal Rao, who was the conservator of forests in the Mysore state. And this is a letter written in Telugu. He says, Vittal Rao, the government has said this place is very barren, it should be forested. They are giving some money for that purpose. I want you to buy 200 saplings, and he describes what saplings they are. Send them here, we'll plant them here and make this a green place. And he gives instructions about how it should be brought and all that. So that is how he involved. So, he showered love, and as a result, many flowers blossomed. To cut a long story short, the general hospital grew and grew, and it is still growing. But that is not the real story. The real story is about the hospital where you are meeting. How did that come into existence all of a sudden? And it did come into existence all of a sudden. And the announcement of that about that hospital was made on 23rd November 1990. That was Baba's 65th birthday. His birthdays used to attract huge crowds, and the celebrations would be held in an open ground called the Hillview Stadium, which is just a short distance from here. And the huge crowd was there. And in the midst of that, Baba suddenly said, if rich people get sick, they go to foreign countries for treatment. If they have heart problem, they go to America for treatment. What happens when poor people fall sick? They have nowhere to go. So I have decided to build in this place a super speciality hospital where all advanced treatment will be offered, and offered free, no charge to anybody. There was a huge thunderous applause. And then he said, the foundation stone for this hospital was laid yesterday, and the hospital will be inaugurated on 22nd November 1991. Again a huge applause. Now there is a little story behind. He also said, you watch, you may not believe it, it's going to happen. Sai Sankalpa is Vajra Sankalpa. That means when I make a decision, it is as firm and as hard as diamond. Nothing can shake it. It takes a lot of confidence to say that. Now, why did he make such a strong and powerful statement? There's a little story behind it which is not known. So let me share it with you. 22nd November is the day when Baba, the university founded by Baba, has its annual convocation. That year, the guest of honor was then President of India, who happens to carry the same name as me, Mr. R. Venkatraman. And Dr. Vardhacharya said that I received an award, I received it from the hands of that gentleman, R.V., as he was known. Baba had requested R. Venkatraman to lay the foundation stone for the hospital, and he had agreed. But when he came here, and Baba said, let's go to the ground and we'll have a groundbreaking ceremony, you lay the foundation stone, his protocol people said, no, the President of India cannot lay the foundation stone. He said, why? You know, in this country, they lay foundation stone and then it's forgotten. So, you can declare open a building, but not lay the foundation stone. So he came sheepishly and told Baba, my people say I cannot lay the foundation stone. Baba was, of course, not very happy about it. He said, the world will still go on without you. He said, let us all go. He saw to it that there was groundbreaking ceremony and the foundation stone was laid. All right. Time rolls. Meanwhile, people said, this is nonsense. This is a village. How can you build a super speciality hospital? That too in 1 year. This is a lot of baloney. Everybody forgot about it. In April 1991, Baba took a bunch of students and went to a hill station called Kodaikanal. It's very nice there. and it's about 2,500 meters above sea level. It's very cool. Nice to be there in summer. And he took a few elders with him. One of them was Colonel Jograu, who had served in the British Army and retired. He was a civil engineer. It was his job to get that hospital built. One day he was looking very morose. So Baba went and asked him, "What's wrong with you? Why are you looking so depressed and worried?" He said, "Baba, you have announced you are going to build a hospital. Where is the money? I am having a headache." Baba said, "I was the one who declared the hospital is going to be built. So if anyone is going to have the headache, it is me. Who are you to have my headache?" In June of that year, I came to the university and I passed by the hospital. Some work was going on. All they had built was the perimeter wall. In August, Professor Sampath, then the Vice Chancellor of the university, he was the third Vice Chancellor, I was the fifth. He sent me a message. I had known Sampath for many years. He was a wonderful man. Professor Sampath said, "Professor Venkatraman, Baba wants you here. Come immediately." So I came. It was Krishna Janmashtami time, sometime late August. And he said, "Go to the hospital construction. You are a computer man. See how to lay the computer connections and all that." So I went there, walked around. There was a lot of construction going on. And I didn't know it was supposed to be ready by November. And let me cut now to 18th November 1991. Dr. Safaya, the director of the hospital, he told me personally that on 18th November, there was so much left to be done. He panicked and he told his wife, "I am leaving, I have failed Baba. I am going back to Delhi. You pack up and come later. This hospital cannot be ready in 4 days." But believe me, it was. How do I know? I was physically present here on 22nd November. And in fact, I still remember the ice cream they gave us while we were waiting. It was gaily decorated. Baba was going here and there. A police band was playing. Suddenly a helicopter appeared overhead. You know, the airport is just next to the hospital. And very shortly, I saw the Prime Minister of India at that time, Mr. P.V. Narasimha Rao, walking in, accompanied by Professor Sampath and Colonel Jograu, the man with the headache. And they went straight to the entrance. There were no speeches. He paid his obeisance to Baba. Baba said, "Does the ribbon, cut the ribbon." He cut the ribbon. The door was open. They went inside. Baba lit a lamp. Dr. Reddy was inside. I know because I have seen the photograph. He had a nice, luxurious mustache at that time, if I may reveal a secret. Baba then went upstairs. There was a patient already anesthetized. From outside he blessed. And as Dr. Safaya said, "The surgeon's knife touched the skin exactly at the hour," he said. 4 surgeries were done that day. And next day, 1991, 23rd November, there was again a birthday, and Baba said, "I am very happy to announce that yesterday 4 surgeries were performed and all the patients are well, doing well." Now, at that time, many people said, "Okay, Baba has built in a hospital, but I give you 6 months maximum." They predicted infant mortality. Ladies and gentlemen, this coming November 22nd, that hospital is going to celebrate its 20th anniversary. That is Baba's Vajra Sankalpa. Now, let me turn to some beautiful stories about the hospital. These are all patient stories. You've all been busy in the conference and you would not have had time to see the wonderful facilities. But more important than the facilities is the treatment that is given to patients. As Dr. Safaya often used to tell me, in this hospital, patient is God. Before I go to patient stories, I must tell you something about the chemistry of the hospital. How Baba's shower of love, downpour of love, made that blossom into a huge field of flowers. The hospital is kept spick and span, clean. No employees are employed for that purpose. It's all done by a cadre of volunteers known as sevadals, who come from all over the country. They keep changing every 15 days or 10 days. And they come from all walks of life. They may be a software engineer, they may be a teacher, he may be a professor, he may be an accountant, or just an ordinary person. Also many doctors are attracted. And I must mention, in fond remembrance and great reverence, late Dr. Butt. He passed away recently at the ripe old age of 91 or so. He is known in India as the father of urology. For many years he served in the famous Christian Medical College in Vellore. And during his days, there was not one celebrity whom he had not examined or treated, including prime ministers and so on. Because everybody gets, you know, some problem, urological problem in old age. And he has treated everybody. And he told me personally that all his life he had one dream, to serve in a hospital where patients are treated free. He had to wait till this hospital was opened. And Baba said, now there is a hospital, come and serve here. He promptly came. He served along with his wife. His wife passed away. He continued to serve. And towards the end, he began to live in the hospital. He was living in one of the rooms. He was a wheelchair man. But you know what? He had trained something like 25 diplomats, all of whom were holding very high positions in hospitals all over India. And 2 years ago, there was a gathering of them, reunion. And I've got photographs. He was a grand old man. Even at that age, almost till the very end, he would go in his wheelchair, he would talk to the doctors, he would talk to the patients, he would give advice. He was a live wire. He enjoyed working. That was the kind of, you know, emotion that Baba was able to extract out of anybody who came in contact with him. Clay would become gold or diamond by his touch. Now for the stories. Three short stories. The first story is not very spectacular, but it conveys the essence of this hospital. This was narrated to me by Dr. Iyer, a cardiologist there. He can be recognized by his beard and his very strong spiritual look. He said, very early on, one day a poor man came. Back then the hospital was new, not many people knew about it. There was no waiting line. He brought with him a young 13-year-old daughter. This man was very poor and he said he had no shirt or anything. He just wore an upper cloth like Mahatma Gandhi. Even his dhoti was only up to his knees. He had a stick and all that. He came from some village up in northern Andhra Pradesh near Karimnagar or Warangal or somewhere. His daughter had a problem, heart problem. She was examined and she was immediately admitted for surgery. By God's grace, surgery went off well, and after 10 days or so, she was to be discharged. So Dr. Iyer called this man and said, here is your daughter, here is the discharge certificate. This is what she must do to take care of herself. Everything is fine, now you may go. He says, Iyer tells me, and I have it on tape, the old man began to cry. So I was taken aback, so I asked him, now what? And the old man said, all these days I have been subsisting on one banana for lunch and one banana for dinner. By the way, back then bananas were cheap. You could get 6 bananas for 1 rupee, not now. That is inflation. Why did he do that? He did that because he wanted to save money, and he says, when my daughter came out, I wanted to have one good meal with her. That is how poor he was. And here was his daughter who had been operated for some problem in the heart. Dr. Iyer said, that is the story of this hospital. Day after day, it is repeated in 100 different ways. My next story concerns a young woman of about 23 or so. This happened about a year or so back. She came here with a huge tumor. I seen photographs, unbelievable. She was the daughter of a very poor worker in Orissa. Orissa is a backward state, and this man was a poor man in a backward state. And the problem was, connected with some tooth defect which led to growth which was locally malignant, and she needed reconstructive surgery. The surgery was done by Dr. Raghav Reddy, and he did a marathon operation and took out a tumor this big. He had to remove this entire jaw, and in order to put a bone there, he took the 9th rib and put it there. I know because he showed me the x-rays. And meanwhile, we got to know about it, and we heard that this man was very poor. So you know what some people did? He had borrowed 10,000 rupees. He had hardly any money. He had already borrowed 3,000 to take that girl to different doctors. But for coming year, he had borrowed 10,000 rupees. And he was indebted. So these people collected some money. They did not give that money to him. They gave it to one of the district presidents of the Sathya Sai Seva organization. They told him, you go to those fellows who loan money.
It's my pleasure now.
But I give you 6 months. The old man began to cry, sign, so that this man is free of debt. Not only that, this girl has to come 3 months later for a checkup because they have to measure and put dentures because, you know, all the teeth were gone on the lower side. So you buy tickets for both of them, bring them and take them back and make sure they are taken care of here. So that is the way this love of Baba works on the side. And since this is an orthopedic conference, I would be failing in my duty if I did not have an orthopedic story. And this concerns a man called Jahangir, who was a mason. Jahangir is a Muslim. His hometown is Calcutta, now called Kolkata. He was asked to do some school repairs in a school, so he went up a bamboo scaffold and he was applying plaster. The bamboo gave way and he fell about 25 feet or 8 or 10 meters. That was a big fall. The fellow had shooting pain in his back and he was paralyzed below the waist. He was carried in an ambulance to hospital. Nobody would treat him, nobody would say what the problem is. All they said was it will cost a lot of money. This fellow was in sheer agony. Somehow, somebody told him about this hospital. That somebody had been treated in this hospital. He didn't know anything about this place. So placing hope and faith in his God, Allah, he took his brother. And he was literally brought in a stretcher all the way from Calcutta to this place. And he was brought to the hospital. He was examined and the surgery was done. That surgery was done by Dr. Kailash Rao, who is somewhere here, and Dr. Vasuki. That is not the great part. After the surgery was over, he was discharged. And he was told, look, you can go home, but you need physiotherapy. So he stayed for 5 months and he had physiotherapy. And at the end of it, he could actually get down from the bed and walk. Till that time, after surgery, he could lie down, but he could not get down and stand up. 5 months of physiotherapy, he could actually walk. And when he went, meanwhile, you know, the news had spread to Calcutta, to his basti or village, the slum where he was staying. And when he went home in a taxi from Howrah station, there was a big reception committee. They were all cheered and they hugged and embraced him because he had been literally brought back to life. We sent a cameraman who is known to us. He has changed his profession. He has gone into what you call retail fish selling. He goes early in the morning to the fish market, wholesale fish market. He buys, puts it on a basket and bicycles and sells fish on the way. Can you imagine that? This man who had been paralyzed below the waist is now going around living a normal life. Not one penny was charged. Not one penny. Just for the record, let me say that during the calendar year 2009, about 14,000 patients were treated as inpatients in this hospital. As inpatients for some procedure. It may be, you know, putting a stent, or some removing a stone or whatever, in all the things. All the treatment were free. Most of the patients came from here, but 1,400 patients came from West Bengal. They came from almost all over India. Orissa, 900 patients. So the word has spread. They have no other place to go, so they come here. And now come to the last part of my talk. And this is very important because I wish to say a few words about the take-home lesson. Okay, Baba built this hospital, you and I can't do it. But is there anything that we can learn from what he has done and what he has said? Many things, but I will discuss three aspects of how to do service. The first aspect is, if you do any service project, especially a large one, and there may be many rich people who can afford to do a large one, there are certain aspects relating to project management to which they must pay attention. Projects are usually done in a very bureaucratic manner, which is top-down. Many organizations do this. Oxfam does it, Red Cross does it. You know, there is an earthquake in Haiti, there is a lot of work, relief work and so on. But it's always top-down. And in a top-down approach, if $1 is granted for the project, how much reaches the bottom? That's a big question. In the best of cases, it's a study done by the US Red Cross, where there is no hanky-panky, 50 cents to the dollar goes to the beneficiaries. Remaining 50 cents goes as overheads. Now, in the projects that Baba did, you may not believe it, but something like 90 to 92% goes to the beneficiaries. A contract is given and the money is paid to them according to the work done. The overhead charges are very low. How come? Because the people who do the projects do it all voluntarily, almost in all cases. Recently, there were 700 houses had to be built in Orissa for people whose houses were washed away in an unexpected flood. This happened in September 2008. When Baba heard about it, he said, what is happening to those people? Are there no rich people in Orissa? Then people said, Baba, the state is very poor and people are very poor. But are there no rich people? They said, there are 4 or 5 very big companies, multinational companies, billion-dollar companies. Are they not doing anything? No, Baba, they are all in London, Bombay, places like that. What do they care if houses are washed away? That we'll build 700 houses. And he sent 2 people from here to be with the project construction all the time. They are from Orissa, so they could speak the local language. And they mobilized a lot of people who had retired from the Public Works Department, PWD, to help them because work was going on simultaneously in 3 districts. The overhead came down because these people are doing volunteer work. And almost all the money was going for construction. And by their presence, they made sure that the quality of construction was good, that sand was not mixed instead of cement and so on and so forth. So, that is the first aspect of project management. Cut down overheads in the best possible manner. The second is, mix the top-down approach with the bottom-up approach. What is the meaning of bottom-up approach? Let me give you an example. Slum clearance. I've been following some of these stories of slum clearances, and in 3 different countries, the same story. Cambodia, Kenya, and Brazil. Let me take the Cambodia case. In Cambodia, the river Mekong flows through the town, capital city, Phnom Penh. And there was a huge slum. But Cambodia wanted to attract tourists because there are a lot of tourist attractions, and this slum was an eyesore. So they said, let us clear the slum and beautify the place. So they built a township some 20 kilometers downstream and shifted all these people and put them there. Town was beautiful, but all the slum dwellers were unhappy. Why? They said they have given us houses, but where is the work? When we were in the middle of the city, we could get work. Now there is no work. If I have to go to work, I have to spend a lot of money on transport. Whatever I earn is spent in transport. How do I eat? So, Baba said, when you do a project, don't do it sitting in an office. Pay attention to the people for whom the project is meant. Keep in mind their suffering, their pain, their anxieties. If you don't keep that in mind, your project will be a waste. This is exactly what has happened in Cambodia, this is exactly what has happened in Kenya, and it is happening in Brazil. Why? Because people who say they want to do big, big projects don't pay attention to grassroots. Baba was born in a poor village. He was poor. He lived amongst poor. And he always thought about the poor. So he was able to mix this bottom up, which included compassion, sensitivity and understanding. And that is very important in projects. And lastly, there is the spiritual aspect. He says, if you get into any service activity, you must start with compassion. Without compassion, there will be selfishness. And if there is selfishness, you cannot do service properly. And that is exactly what is reflected in many of the patient stories that I told you. Now, let me go to some other aspects of the spiritual overtones. And here I will end. Today, there is a lot of hullabaloo and hue and cry in India about corruption. They say corruption is ruining the country. Let me tell you, people say it's all due to poverty. Let me tell you, I have lived in this country all along and I am going to be 79. Back in the 40s, when I was a small boy, corruption was very rare. And India was very much poorer than what it is now. Why was it so? These people were poor, why were they not corrupt? Because there was morality in society. Today we have given up moral values. And this was one thing that Baba kept on insisting. People are talking about, you pass this bill, have tight regulation, have a lot of police, throw them in jail, this and that. It will work up to a point, but not beyond. So I'll give you a simple example. As doctors you will understand. Supposing there is malaria or tuberculosis, widespread. Yes, you have to treat the patient, that is true. But you must also attack the root cause. In the case of malaria, it is caused by mosquitoes. So where are the mosquitoes breeding? You must do something about that. In the same way, we must attack the root cause of corruption. Root cause of corruption is widespread dishonesty. People have lost their moral fiber. So, Baba always used to talk about integrity, character, honesty. How does one develop integrity? By answering one's own conscience. So you must look onwards. Is this right? Is this wrong? Is this good? Is this bad? That is what spirituality tells us. That is what our parents used to tell us. That is what our teachers used to tell us. And society looked down upon a man or woman who did not have character, who did not, who was not moral. Today, all that is gone. And incidentally, this is where education comes. Baba spent a lot of time on education. He gave his maximum attention to students. Why? Because he wanted to build up character in them. He always used to say, the end of education is character. And not only in his university. So alright, you can train 1,000 students a year or whatever. What about the country? He established informal education through the so-called Bal Vikas movement, children's movement. They are all over India. And there they get extramural training and coaching at all ages on how to lead a healthy, happy, moral, honest life. Now, is Indian society, or for that matter world society, humanity, paying any attention to character development? No. All educational institutions are increasingly becoming for profit only. If that is happening, we are writing our own death warrant. We have to go back to values. In fact, I wrote an op-ed for a national newspaper on the importance of character development in education. The editor sent it back saying, this article is not suitable for a newspaper. That is the quality of our media and all that. So, the bottom line is, the head always creates problems, but it can never solve problems. Baba said, you can't use the head to solve problems, man. Don't lose your head. Use your heart. So the heart and the head must combine. When the heart comes in, compassion, sensitivity, selflessness, love, all this come in. That is what Baba taught all his life and showed that it can work. People say you need money. All projects do not need money. To go and promote honesty among people, you do not need money. How much does it cost? The taxpayer does not have to spend one money. So you and I can actually serve if we want to without having any purse. How rich was Baba? What was he there in his pocket? There was not a single penny in his pocket on the day he said, I am going to serve humanity. And he did it. His brother did not believe it. But you wouldn't be here if you had not built that hospital. So that is enough to show that love can do miracles. I think I have said my piece. Thank you, Dr. Vardachari. You can all wake up now. There's good dinner waiting, I am told. Sai Ram.
Thank you, Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, sir. This is certificate of honor. This certificate is issued to Professor G. Venkatraman in recognition of his valuable contributions to Sri Sat Sai International Orthopedic Conference held on July 22-24, 2011 at Sri Sat Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences, Prashantigram, Puttaparthi, India. Signed by Dr. A.N. Safaya, Director, SSIHMS, PG, and by Dr. R. Vardachari, Chairman, Department of Orthopedics, SSIHMS, PG. And this is the certificate.
Listening to a talk by Professor G. Venkatraman addressing the delegates of the Sri Sathya Sai International Orthopedic Conference held from July 22nd to 24th, 2011 at the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences, Prashantigram, Puttaparthi. Thank you and Sai Ram.